You are Locked On MLB, your daily MLB podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, baseball fans. Welcome to Locked On MLB, part of the Locked On Podcasting Network, your team every day. This is the daily baseball podcast. We talk about all the major league teams. I'm yours, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully. You can follow the show at Instagram or on Twitter at Locked On MLB. If you want to follow me personally, and this is where you tweet to, if you want to send me questions to answer on the show, do that at Sully Baseball or go to Instagram at Sully Baseball Podcast. Today's show is brought to you in part by Hotels.com. Don't hate like your friend's trip. Book your own with Hotels.com and get rewarded basically everywhere. Hotels.com. Be there. Do that. Get rewarded. Hey, do you know what you can do? You can subscribe to this show on the Himalaya podcasting app. You can also follow us on the website directly, Locked On MLB. You could subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Podbean, Player FM, Google Podcasts, Google Play. You know all the places to listen to a podcast. And when you get in your car, tell your smart device, play podcast Locked On MLB. Or check out one of the other Locked On podcast where it really is your team every day. I have a special guest today, which is comedian Liam McEnany, host of the Tell Your Friends podcast and a diehard New York Mets fan. And we've known each other for a while and we had a really fun conversation, and I'm going to be playing you parts of it today and tomorrow. Maybe a couple of snippets I'll sprinkle along here or there along the way. I do want to spend a little bit of time before we get into the conversation with Liam McEnany for the daily segment we call the Marlins Minute. Now, I don't know if you know who Adam Jones is. Adam Jones is not an outfielder for the Arizona Diamondbacks, formerly the Baltimore Orioles. Actually, he is. There is a man by that name who is a ball player. But he's also, there's another Adam Jones, who's the chief revenue officer of the Miami Marlins. And he was quoted in the Miami Herald as saying, "The Marlins have a 3 to 5 year window to put a sustainable product on the field that's competitive day in and day out." Well, isn't that dandy? Now, look, it. The Marlins have had some nice pitching from Sandy Alcantara. Lopez has been good. I mean, they've been having some decent pitching over the last few weeks, but this is a rancid team. Now, the Marlins are having a hard enough time getting people interested in their ball club and to put any seat, fannies in the seats there in Miami to come out and say, well, you know, it's going to be approximately a presidential term before we're competitive. I mean, what does that say? What are you saying to the fans out there who are actually showing up? I would like to put this out there, and I've brought this this analogy before with the Marlins, and I don't understand why they can't do this. Every year you're seeing that there's a glut of free agents, and some of them are outstanding players. Hell, you got Dallas Keuchel and Craig Kimbrell are still available. And you are obviously, the Marlins are trying to build a team through their farm system. But the 2013 Boston Red Sox, a fluke in many ways, but in some ways should be a fluke that the Marlins should emulate. One of the things that they did that year, the Red Sox, was they loaded the team with a bunch of players with 1 and 2 year deals with a sense that they were going to be placeholders. And they wound up winning the World Series. But even if they didn't win the World Series, they were fun, and it gave Red Sox fans something fun to cheer for. It happened to be a title. But even if they had lost the ALCS to the Tigers, which I thought they were going to, it would have been something memorable, a reason to go to the game. Why can't the Marlins, when there's a glut of free agents, just say, hey, let's just load our team up with players for 1 or 2 year deals that at least be fun, that at least give us something to cheer for? Actually, a better team to look at was the 1977 White Sox. On the verge of free agency, Bill Veeck just bought a bunch of players, the Oscar Gambles and the Richie Zicks of the world. the Bobby Bonds of the world, just filled his team with home run hitters and said, hey, give us 1 year. And it was a fun year for White Sox fans. If you're going to say, hey, it's going to be 4 or 5 years before we're any good, why not at least give him 1 year of pushing your chips to the center of the table and saying, hey, let's at least have something fun. Give it a whirl. And for everyone else, you say, hey, if you're a player who's a free agent, say, hey, would you like to have another job in the Major League Baseball? Be a millionaire and live a year in Miami. There are worse fates you can have. All right, well, that was a little more than a minute, but hey, we cover the Marlins every day on this because why not? So, Liam McEnany is a wonderful comedian, a wonderful podcast host, and someone who's been my friend for a long time and a rabid Mets fan. So let's have part one of our conversation.
Hey, fans of Locked On MLB, it is my great honor to have my friend of several decades and
24 years, Sully.
24 years. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm just going to go right to it. You've seen him on television. You've listened to him in your earbuds. He is Liam McEnany. Liam, welcome to Locked On MLB.
Thank you. And just so you know, people listening at home, you may have seen me on television, but don't beat yourself up if you don't remember me.
It's not like I have Bryan Cranston on here, you know. It's
No. I've been on a Showtime special with other comics and TV shows like that. So
you know, most comics can't say that. So hey, let's.
I'm not putting down my credits. I'm just reassuring your audience that they have seen me on TV. But if they don't remember it, I don't take it personally.
Fair enough. Now, Liam and I met in the late '90s. What was it? '97. You gonna think?
I would say 96, actually, so 23 years. We met in 96 at Rebar on 16th Street and 8th Avenue.
16th Street and 8th Avenue. We were living in New York City, both stand-up comedians. And this was a great time to be a New York Yankee fan. And so, naturally, you were a New York Met fan during that period of time. But it was a time when the Mets were starting to get good again. So the Yankees were flirting with greatness.
I would say the Mets were flirting with greatness for about 10 years before 9 years before Los Mets in 2005.
That's true. Okay, that's fair enough. But like,
because we had like Mo Vaughn, we had the Mo Vaughn year.
Yeah, but you also, I mean, this was pre Vaughn. This was just around the time that Piazza first arrived.
Right.
And you had the Edgardo Alfonso's of the world. You had the Al Leiter came back over from Florida. And they were starting to, they were flirting with contention in 97. They contended late in 98. And finally in 99, they made the playoffs. And they were doing this, like they were having a pretty fun, exciting team while the Yankees were having one of the great teams of all time. And when you have a menu as a sports fan, say, what do? I sign on with a legendary team and a franchise having its greatest run since the glory days of the 50s, or I have this other team in Queens, which is putting something together.
Right.
You grew up at the era of the 86 Mets, right? That was the players that you knew the most, right?
I saw a bunch of those games at Shea Stadium. I mean, obviously, I didn't see the playoffs of the World Series because my parents didn't have any money. But, you know, back then, Mets tickets were pretty cheap and you could bring a picnic lunch. So, yeah. You know, like the family would just have a full day. You know, it's like you get to see Strawberry, you get to see Gooden, you get to see Nails. You know, you get to see all these guys. And by the way, you can now only see Lenny Dykstra if you hang out at a circuit court somewhere.
I gotta say one thing, and please, I said this on Twitter. People thought it's because I'm a bitter Red Sox fan. But my cousin Dave, who I think you may have met, cousin Dave.
I met cousin Dave.
Yeah, cousin Dave is the
biggest. I met the entire Sullivan family.
That's true. But I know, my cousin Dave, who's probably listening to this right now, is the biggest Mets fan I know. He's texting me Mets stuff like in February. Right. But he is in agreement with me that the Mets have to win another World Series, and they have to win it soon, because we're both so sick of books about the 86 World Series and all this hullabaloo about the 86 Mets. So Mets fans need a new title to latch on to for a while, because there's nothing left. There's nothing left to what else are you going to tell? Like,
well, first of all, you're talking about a championship team in a major media market. So that's true. Never going to stop. Even if the Mets win like five in a – well, if the Mets win five in a row, maybe people will forget about the 86 World Series.
But there's not thousands of books written about the 96 Yankees. And that was a team with several Hall of Famers on it.
Well, again, I mean, I lived in New York City the year Jeter retired. It was a bit much.
Yeah, it was. It was. It's, it,
and, you know, it's like – okay, yes, the guy was maybe a Hall of Fame herpes spreader. Absolutely.
Oh!
Nobody did numbers like Jeter did with the models and actresses of New York City at that
Shots
time.
Shots fired. Shots fired.
But the thing about the 86 Mets is not only were they a great team, but they were really fun to watch. They had really interesting personalities. Ray Knight was a fist fighter. There was a game, and I don't remember the numbers anymore. But I think most of the starting lineup got thrown out of the game. And Ray Knight and another hitter, who I forget, had to alternate relief pitching inning to inning.
Yeah.
You don't see teams like that in Major League Baseball anymore because they would all get, you know, suspended for 30 games without pay.
I'll tell you something that it's funny that there was the Mets ownership stumbled across a team that really kind of, in many ways, symbolized the excess of that 80s Ed Koch, Trump with his natural hair, Bonfire of the Vanities, New York. And it sort of, it had the glamorous players, it had the tough players, it had all these people, and that they came through with a championship. And they were kind of like hard partying, coke-taking, women-chasing, you know,
right,
players. And for whatever reason, the management over the next few years seemed hell-bent to take away anything regarding anything colorful about the team.
Well, I mean, the other thing too about that team you have to remember is that they really reflected the kind of blue-collar ethos, you know, like the kind of blue-collar mentality of New York City. And you had that, like all the big stars of that era, like out of New York City, like the cast of Saturday Night Live, Howard Stern on the radio, everyone who was making it big in New York City felt like they were someone you could hang out with at the bar and not know they were famous. Like,
yeah.
Keith Hernandez was a dude, like when Seinfeld did that episode about being friends with him.
Yeah.
You're like, yeah, that makes sense. Hernandez seems like the kind of guy that you could just run into and be like, hey, do you mind helping me move, or whatever that episode was about.
Right, right. And, you know, people talk about Wally Backman, who was a decent platoon second baseman, and talk about it as if he was, you know, Cooperstown bound. You know, it's like, it's because of what, you know, that team clicked and worked together and had that one year where everything worked perfectly.
Right.
And it looked like they were getting to the World Series again 2 years later in 88 when they lost to Hershiser. And then in 89, they just seemed hell-bent to get rid of everybody. And then you looked up and 1 minute Dykstra's gone, Mookie Wilson's gone, Keith Hernandez is like, it just seemed like they're trading Wally Backman to the Twins. It seemed like they said, we just got to get, everything's got to go. And they try to reinvent the team. And a few years after that, it's the Vince Coleman, Bobby Bonilla throwing firecrackers at little kids team.
Well, first of all, that was also maybe the biggest group of assholes in Major League Baseball history. I mean, you might have to look back before the Negro Leagues were integrated into Major
League. Yeah, I was going to say, Ty Cobb may be having something to say about that record.
New York City has a great history of blue-collar players who kind of are neighborhood guys or feel like neighborhood guys. Like, Duke Snyder famously would walk to the stadium from his apartment every day, and the little kids would follow him in the neighborhood. And so I feel like the 86 Mets were kind of the end of that kind of era where you felt like the team really belonged to New York City. Like, by the time you got to that great run of Yankee championship games, you just felt like everybody got into their separate limos and went to penthouse apartments and went to the club, you know, in their off hours. But they never... Like, I got to say, you know, none of those guys ever felt like they were a fabric of New York City the way that the 86 Yankees, who were dog shit, felt like.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you never get the sense that you're going to hang out with Andy Pettitte and Tino Martinez and Derek Jeter at the bar.
No, I mean, and you wouldn't want to. They just seem like jerks. Like, they were great players, but, like, you didn't watch a post-game interview and go, like, man, that guy's totally relatable. I totally get where he's coming from.
Well, I want to remind you can subscribe to this podcast on the Himalaya Podcast app. In an ever-changing podcast world, you need Himalaya, with its curated playlists and new features every day to give you a brand new podcasting experience. Go to your app store. It doesn't matter if you're using Android, doesn't matter if you're using Apple, whatever you're using, it's at your app store. Go download. I'm not even going to edit that out. Download Himalaya. Thank you, pal Sully. Let's pay some bills.
Let me also say this. Hiring used to be hard, and getting a job used to be hard. If you were trying to get someone to your company, there's all these resumes you have to sift through, and if you're trying to get your resume seen by the right people, you might as well make your resume into a paper airplane and throw it into the Pacific Ocean. You got multiple job sites, stacks of resume, confusing review process. But today, hiring can be easy, and you only have to go to one place to get it done, and that is ZipRecruiter.com/lockedon. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards. They don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invite them to apply to your job. And that works great on both sides. Is if you're trying to find the right job, ZipRecruiter sends you reminders, hey, we think you're a good match for this. You may not have known this. Come on, Sully, send your resume. There's a job in Tacoma just waiting for you. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one, spotlights the top candidates, so you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. And guess what? My listeners, yes, you're my listeners. So you listen to Sully when I talk to you. My listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free. You can afford that. You don't have to check your available balance. You've got enough money because we're saying it's for free at this exclusive web address, which is ZipRecruiter.com/lockedon. That's ZipRecruiter.com/LOCKEDON. ZipRecruiter.com/lockedon. ZipRecruiter. You know what it is? It's the smartest way to hire.
I want to bring this up. You and I talked about this in the old podcast, but I realize it reaches something a little deeper about Met fandom. Uh-huh. In 1999, you and I are good friends doing stand-up comedy together in New York, and you're over at my apartment on the West Side of Manhattan, my little studio, and we're watching Game 4 of the 1999 playoffs between the Diamondbacks and the Mets. On my TV, where I think I had some leftover pasta. It's just the two of us in my apartment watching this game. You're a huge Mets fan. And the bottom of the 10th or the 11th inning, Mike Piazza can't play because he's hurt. And his backup, Todd Pratt, hits a fly ball to center field. With his tied, Mets could advance if they win this game. And Pratt hits it to center field. Center fielder of the Diamondbacks, Steve Finley, goes back and leaps up. And Pratt thinks the ball is caught, and he even does the whole, oh, damn it.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah, he does a little pulling up there.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
The announcer, Chris Berman of ESPN, has no idea what's happening.
Right.
And we're watching it on my TV, and you pointed out when we talked about this before, it wasn't exactly a high-def TV that we're watching this game on, that you could see.
No, this was 99. It was, yeah. The TV that launched a rocket to the moon in 69, essentially.
And there's how many? There's 55,000 people in the stands, several million people watching on TV, and only one person on the planet Earth knows if the Mets advanced or not, and that's Diamondback center fielder Steve Finley, who just starts to walk. He's like, nope, I don't have the ball. And he just starts to walk. And there's this long pause, and you're by my couch, and you want to jump up.
But like, I couldn't.
You couldn't. Todd Pratt wants to jump up. They even showed the Mets reaction, like John Franco and Piazza and all of them are looking like, are we advancing? Are we advancing? And eventually you realize he did, and you did jump up. Yeah, and everyone was happy. But if anything symbolizes Met fandom, it's at that point, the only people who had ever ended a series with a home run were Bill Mazeroski, Chris Chambliss, and Joe Carter. And now it was Todd Pratt. This was only the fourth time in baseball history this has ever happened. And yet, it should be one of those moments that is immortalized. And instead, you're by my couch going, should I be happy now?
Yeah. No, that was absolutely... you're dead on. And the only other moment I can really think of that might come close to that was 2000. I was at Tammy Vernikoff's apartment watching the Mets Yankees World Series. And, you know, it's like, it was over. The series was over, but the game was close.
Yep.
It was the last game. Piazza hits it to deep center field. Mm. Total Mike Piazza home run, saving the game maneuver. Stood up screaming right into the glove of the Yankee center fielder. The series was over. And it is absolutely that, like, New York Mets fan push-pull. I mean, look it. I know you want the Mets to win the World Series. I think it would be the worst thing right now for the Mets as a team, because it would just I'm totally not kidding.
No,
it would
justify everything.
It would justify everything the Wilpons have done in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
It would actually make things way worse for the Mets right now if they suddenly had a championship team spring out of nowhere. The Wilpons, who fell for a Ponzi scheme, and then to dig themselves out, installed an Amway office in the ground floors of their new, like, they got suckered right into Amway out of the Madoff Ponzi scheme.
When I saw that they put in an Amway branch,
I thought it was a joke.
I thought it was an Onion article. I thought it was the Onion article.
Yeah, I thought it was Photoshop.
Well, hey, William.
Hey, I gotta listen. I gotta prep.
What do you gotta plug? What do you gotta plug? Plug what you wanna plug.
Okay, so I am. Well, first of all, there's a cat across the way who's been watching me for the last 20 minutes. So
you
have at least one audience member for this podcast.
Nice.
I'm bringing back my podcast. Tell Your Friends, History's Greatest Podcast, tyfpodcast.com. And you can, I have interviews. I'm launching a new segment called Expert Witness. Mm-hmm. And I interviewed our friend Jen Dederich, because she wrote a book about women's history. I interviewed her about the ERA. I talked to my friend Paul Sullivan about, that's you, about the designated hitter rule. I have interviews with Mark Brazil, who created that 70s show and that 80s show. And we talk about actually why that 80s show failed. Like, he's actually was very honest about his career. We sat in a Denny's and ate lunch for an hour and just talked about his career and what went right and what went wrong. Paul Myers, who wrote a book about the kids in the hall, talked to Mike Doty, who's a musician. I'm performing all over Los Angeles. So feel free to hit me up at heyitsliam.com, HEYITSLIAM.com. But really, listen to the Tell Your Friends podcast. I'm going to be talking to Emily Flake, the New Yorker cartoonist, Erin Lee Carr, who is a documentarian. She's like a famous true crime documentarian. I have a lot of cool interviews coming up. Trying to get Kathy Geiswider, this comic strip Kathy, but I don't think that's going to happen.
Oh yeah, make sure to plug the things that aren't happening. We're going to.
Oh, I will ramble about thing about talking about myself. Sully, is it's what I love to do. It's why I got into stand up.
Do what you love. Hey,
I just think it's funny that I'm talking to Kathy Geiswider's publicist about whether she has room in her schedule for me. It's just a funny life I lead.
I know. All right, man. Well, hey, look at Liam McEnany. I'm
brother Ben.
I hope the Mets do well for both you and my cousin Dave. Hey, Liam McEnany, thanks for being part of the Locked On MLB.
Oh, we're still
podcast.
Doing the interview. Oh, shit. Yeah. Okay. yeah. Hey, man. Listen, thanks for having me on Locked On MLB, the podcast with Paul Sullivan.
Yeah.
And congratulations to everybody listening, but especially cousin Dave.
All right, man. Hey, rock out. Okay, that was part one
my conversation with Liam McEnany. We talk about other Mets stuff, and we're going to play that later on this week. And please go follow his podcast, Tell Your Friends. So you can subscribe to this podcast on the Himalaya podcasting app, or you can listen to us directly at the website at LockedOnMLB. Subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Podbean, Google Play, all those places. You can follow the show at LockedOnMLB on Twitter and on Instagram. You can follow me at Sully Baseball or at Sully Baseball Podcast at Instagram. So, and oh, that's the other thing I'm supposed to do. You're supposed to get in your car, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On MLB, or check out some of the other great podcasts on the Locked On Podcast Network. Truly is your team every day. Thanks, Liam McEnany. This has been the Locked On MLB Podcast for May 22nd, 2019. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully.